don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Saturday to you all. It is February 4th, year of our Lord, 2023. I am live here at First String Sports. This is going to be a loaded show for the next 2 hours. Now, normally, let's say 96% of the show is pure high school talk. Throwing a little bit of a curveball today, but this is going to be a doozy. I've been posting about this for the last week on social media. And the reason why is because at 11 o'clock, I'm going to talk about baseball with Tom Goodwin. You guys know Tom Goodwin, right? Fresno State legend. Before that, went to Central High, 3-sports star. Part of that incredible run that the Bulldogs had, 1988 especially, 32-game winning streak, College World Series, just an incredible team. This is my favorite Fresno State team of all time, athletic team of all time, right? Tom Goodwin was a major part of it, drafted in the first round by the Dodgers, number 22 overall, 14-year major league career, world champion from the Boston Red Sox, 2018. You guys know he was a first base coach? If you remember that World Series when they beat the Dodgers, right? If you remember that World Series, Tom Goodwin was actually mic'd up at first base. And there, he gave a shout-out to Fresno State. He's coming in. He's coming in live to First String Sports for a full hour, from 11 o'clock to 12 o'clock. Of course, there's going to be some commercials from our great sponsors. But Tom Goodwin's coming in live. You're going to hear his whole story from Coach Bennett, to playing in the major leagues, to playing with Hall of Famers, to winning the World Series, to growing up playing for Central High, 3-sports star. I can't wait. The guy's a legend. He can really, really tell a story, and he's going to be here live at First String Sports. Come on in to First String. Come meet Tommy, first of all. It'd be great. It'd be awesome. We're showing on our Facebook Live and Twitter Live from 1430 ESPN. Against the wall, we have a Central Grizzlies chair, one of those chair rests, and a Fresno State one. We've got some Central Grizzlies hats. He's going to sign those. Come into First String Sports. Enter for a raffle. And if you are present and your number is called, you're going to get one of those. You're going to come on with the Tom Goodwin autograph, Central Grizzlies chair, or Fresno State chair, and we have some hats as well, Grizzlies hats. So this is going to be a fun, fun day. I've been looking forward to this. Like I said, all week. I booked him about a week and a half ago. Was able to call him from a mutual friend. And he's like, yeah, coming in for the alumni game. That's the reason why he's in town. He lives in Texas now. But anyway, I can't wait. I can't wait for you guys to hear the stories from Tom Goodwin. So that's coming up at 11 o'clock. We're going to be talking with Gabe Camarillo after the break. Gabe does an incredible job up and down the central section. We're going to talk about some of the basketball games that have been going on. I know some CMAC action has been pretty, pretty hot for the last couple of weeks. I know he was at a game last night, Edison game. I was able to go to Clovis West and Clovis East and get into that a little bit. At the bottom of the hour, we have our 1430 ESPN Student Athlete of the Week, Logan Kilbert from Sierra High School. He's been in the news a little bit. I know ABC Sports did a segment on him. It was really, really well done. And it gave a little bit of a background about Logan Kilbert and, you know, the incredible scoring run that he's had there at Central High. Just hit the 2,000-point barrier. But he's got a great story. I don't want to spoil too much, but his mother passed away when he was 3.5 years old, and so that's been an inspiration to him. And there was something special that he was gifted by a couple pretty famous people in Hollywood. So can't wait for you guys to hear that story. So Logan Kilbert coming on at the bottom of the hour. Okay, a couple milestones before I take a break and bring on Gabe Camarillo. Last night, like I said, I was able to watch Clovis West and Clovis East, the boys. Clovis West won 81-76. That was a really good game. That was a felt like a playoff game to me. I stayed for the first three quarters of the girls game. And the Clovis West girls beat Clovis East. They have a huge matchup with Clovis High coming this Friday for the track championship. But there was a milestone earlier, I think last week. Craig Campbell won his 700th total win. That's a lot of wins. 700th total win. If you guys remember, he was a coach at Nevada, Reno before he came to Clovis West, won a couple state championships there. Actually, yeah, his win was over Central when they beat him 49-33. That signified his 700th career win. Last night they ended up beating Clovis East 79-54. Trinity Tolbert led with 18. Again, I mentioned that big game on February 10th, which is next Friday already at Clovis. And that, can you guys believe it? That's already the end of the regular season. It's the end of the regular season for the Central section. The playoff brackets will come out the next day, and then here we go. Playoffs begin. I want to mention too, there is a vote that happened in the CIF at the state level. And what they voted on might be a little bit surprising. They voted to have girls flag football. Girls flag football. It passed by a vote of, barely passed actually, 146-0. Yeah, a little sarcasm there. So, yeah, everyone's all in on girls flag football. How's that gonna happen? Well, there are a lot of logistics they're going to have to go through to get girls flag football here in the Central section. I know the NorCal and SoCal, man, they're pretty ramped up about it. I think they're going to go all in. I think as soon as next year, they're going to start having girls flag football. Now, in the Central section, I've talked to a couple people about that. There's some hurdles to get through. First of all, schools have to agree to do it, right? You don't have to have girls flag football. So we'll see what schools are all in for that, or what schools might have it, in the future. But, hey, I assume it would be eight girl flag football. The fields are there, right? The fields will be shortened a little bit. You want to play on the traditional 100-yard field. It's usually 80 by 40. I love it. I love the idea of it. I think it would be an absolute blast. Now, one of the things that they would need to discuss, talking about the Central section, is what season to do it, because that's still up in the air. You can have it whatever season you want. So you could have it in the fall, the winter, or the spring. Now, what makes more sense? I don't know. I think it actually, the spring makes more sense to me, because you have it in the fall, you're competing with football. Obviously, you're figure out if the games might even be on Saturday, and referees and all that stuff. There's lots of things to discuss about that. But I think the spring makes sense. Right, move tennis a little bit. Right, I mean there's lots of revolving doors on that, but. Man, I'm all in. Can you imagine that? Right? Now, Fresno Unified does lacrosse. So lacrosse, in some sense, you're using the same fields as football. You could actually have makeshift fields. I think girls flag football would be an incredible, incredible idea. I'm all in for that. I want to give a couple scores up and down the Central section. I get a couple boys scores. I mentioned the Clovis, the Clovis West game that I went to. Clovis West is ranked number one by Max Preps. They beat Clovis East 81-76. Zach Shohan had a really good game, had over 20 points. Isaac Martinez, again, had a really good second half. Clovis East, they have a really young team. This is the first time I've seen them in person. They got a really young team, but, the future is bright for Coach Adrian Wiggins and his squad. Adrian was on last week. But they have some freshmen that they didn't look like freshmen. And when you're playing against a team like Clovis West, you're going to be challenged. You're going to be tested. And I felt like, the young Clovis East boys played really, really well. So, again, Clovis West won 81-76. Another track game, Clovis North beat Clovis 71-42. Sierra, who we mentioned, Logan Kilbert's coming on the show. They beat Yosemite 77-45. Kilbert had 23 points in that one. Sierra is... Definitely the top team in that league. They're undefeated at 12-0. Bullard keeps rolling. They are now 7-1. The Knights under Tim Adamson. They beat Madera 82-37. Let's look at some more scores here. Sierra Pacific, they've really come along lately. They are playing some really good basketball. They beat Selma on the road 81-78. Hoover, Tazelle Archie, friend of the show, beat Roosevelt 80-73. They've had quite a turnaround. They had that really, really rough schedule. They started off 1-13, but if you look at the schools that they played, you'd be like, "Oh man, yeah, that's that was a gauntlet of a preseason non-league schedule for the Hoover Patriots." But they've come along well in league. All right, a couple more scores here before we hit the break. A game that Gabe Camarillo was at. We're going to be talking about this one. Edison beat Sanger 65-51. I think it was a tight game for a while. And Edison just boarded on late. And why is that significant? Well, Edison, right? Sanger. Well, Sanger beat San Joaquin Memorial. Gabe and I are going to be talking about that game as well. That, to me, that was an absolute shocker. San Joaquin Memorial comes back and beats Garza High 87-39. Let's see here. Central beat Buchanan, Tom Goodwin's alma mater, 54-44. And another one, Lemoore is playing really good basketball right now. They beat Dinuba on the road 60-47. So coming up after the break, talking with Gabe Camarillo, more about high school basketball, a little bit about CIF. I think Gabe was at a CIF meeting last night, see what kind of information he was able to come away with. Talk about all that stuff. Maybe a little bit about the draft status of Jalen Moreno Cropper, Jake Hayner. That's always a hot topic. We love our Fresno State Bulldogs on 1430 as well. So coming up after break, Gabe Camarillo on 1430 ESPN.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome back, Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Vedder, here at First String Sports. Yeah. Smooth beat to Daft Punk. All right, Gabe Camarillo coming on. Gabe, you can listen to him on Home Field Advantage, Monday through Thursday, 3 to 5. I do. I'm driving home from work. I'm listening to Gabe, man. He does a fantastic job getting information out to you up and down the Central section. Gabe, I heard you were at Edison and Sanger last night, right?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, what'd you see over there? What's going on?
It was a good game, a really good game. Sanger had the advantage early. I think Yajay Vance and Ray Brown made the difference. They came in the game in the second quarter and really took over. I mean, Ray Brown had a game-high 20 points. I like Ray Brown's game a lot because Ray Brown can score in a variety of ways. He had like three separate and one layups. He also hit a huge three to give the Tigers their first lead of the game, 42-40 late in the third quarter. And the cool thing about that game was it really was a game of two halves because Sanger controlled the game, I would say, for the first 2.5 quarters. They were up 40-34. And then Edison went on this 24-5 run that was full of these acrobatic layups. Edison's fast break was humming. It was just really fun to see the Tigers have a good game like that because, you know, they have had a lot of adversity this week. And I talked to Coach Fulford after the game, and he talked about that, how important this win was because of the situation with the ineligible player. And I talked about it on my show. You haven't mentioned it yet. Edison could forfeit some games because they accidentally used an ineligible player that was unenrolled during winter break, and the team didn't know about it. The school didn't know about it until I think they got a notification, and that really is no one's fault. If anything, it's a miscommunication between the district, Fresno Unified, and Edison High School. So we'll see what comes of that. No decision's been made, but you have to deal with that kind of stuff off the court. I was interested to see how Edison responded to it on the court. They did really well. They beat Sanger, who beat Edison a couple weeks ago. And I think this could change the playoff picture. Depends on what happens to Edison in those forfeited games. If they are forfeited, then I could see them go down to D2. But I think they would be a really good D1 team as well. Right now, they're projected to be the 12 seed, which means they would go against, I believe, Stockdale. That was a good game the first time these two teams met. I talked to Coach Fulford. He just wants a rematch against one of those Bakersfield teams because he felt his team was in the game against Stockdale. His team was in the game against Centennial. They've been in the games against a lot of good teams, like Bakersfield Christian and Bullard. And speaking of Bullard, they host Edison on Tuesday this upcoming week. That's a must-win game for Bullard if they want to win a CMAC championship.
No, you're right. So, yeah, so Bullard plays, San Joaquin Memorial in that final game. So if both teams go in with one loss, that's going to decide the CMAC championship. So I'm looking at Sanger's schedule right now. Actually, Gabe, let's go back a little bit. Can you explain to us what you understand? So if Edison does end up forfeiting games, do you know how many games there exactly were? They might
not
have
exactly
to forfeit.
No, I don't know how many games, but it would be enough, I think, to drop them down to D2. And if they are a high seed in D2, they could do a couple things. The CIF can. They can make Edison go on the road. And even if Edison's on the road, they probably would make it all the way to Selland, in my opinion, because Edison is just that good. They're like the perfect example of a team that maybe is not, you know, elite enough to compete for a Division I championship like a St. Joseph or a Clovis West or a Clovis North, but they're also too good to be in D2, if that makes sense, right? Like, I could see Edison beating Lemoore. I could see Edison beating Dinuba. I could see Edison having a de facto home game in the Division II championship just down the road at Celland Arena. So I don't know what the CIF decision will affect when it comes to playoff seedings. They may just use the same max preps ratings and just give them the forfeit games and have that reflect on the record. But I am not sure as to how many games it was. But I do know that regardless, Edison's playing hard. They're playing well. And they're going to be a tough team to beat this month.
Well, right now, Edison's sitting at 17-10, and Sanger's at 16-10. So, yeah, it's kind of strange, you know, when Sanger lost to Bullard by 2 points, 50-48, and then they beat San Joaquin Memorial 74-67, right? So I think when we saw that, you know, we both kind of did a couple double takes. We're like, wait, hold on a second. Wait, that just happened, I guess. So what, you know, how did you hear that Sanger was able to beat Memorial, and what significance do you think that has, right? First of all, there was a huge winning streak that Memorial had in the league, right?
There was a huge winning streak. I don't remember how many games.
40-something, like 46, 45,
yeah,
46.
And that just shows how dominant Memorial's been. And it makes sense when you consider who they've had over the years, like a Deion Stroud or a Jalen Green or more recently a Joseph Hunter. But the guy that they had this year wasn't playing against Sanger, and that's Mike Davis Jr. And I think they could have beaten Sanger without Mike Davis Jr. I think they have enough talent without Mike. You have Amari Caraway, you have Julius Olenruaju, you have Dre Davis, and a couple other key guys. But you're losing a guy who averages 20 points a game in Mike Davis Jr. So that is going to make a difference. And from what I heard, you know, it's a tough home gym that Sanger has. It's always tough to win at Sanger. And there were a lot of Panthers in foul trouble, so that impacted how, you know, the game went. So Memorial was leading by 4, I believe, entering the fourth quarter, and Sanger ended up winning by 7. So that fourth quarter for the Apaches was huge. And it's not a surprise if you watch the Sanger Apaches play, because they are a well-coached team. I'm a big fan of what Alvarado is doing over there at Sanger, because his boys are always going to the right spots. It's like kind of watching Clovis West. And it makes sense because Coach Alvarado learned from Lauren LeBeau, who is, you know, part of the Vance Wahlberg coaching tree. So it makes sense to see a Sanger offense that's very similar to some of the offenses we see in the track. A lot of ball movement, a lot of selflessness, and a lot of easy buckets. And they also have one of the best big men in the valley in Caleb Cole. So Sanger is a good team. It's not just because Mike Davis Jr. was out of the game, but I do think it contributed.
No, I agree. Yeah, man, if Bullard's able to win on Tuesday, I think that sets up a pretty tasty matchup on Friday.
I don't know, Paul. Edison's playing really well. That's going to be
a really
good matchup.
I know, that's what I'm saying. If Bullard happens to get by Edison, so that's going to be a hot game as well. Is that game's at Bullard or Edison on Tuesday?
That game is at Bullard on Tuesday.
It's at Bullard. Okay, I think I might have to make my way over there. All right, Gabe, so you were at is it true you were at the CIF meeting yesterday?
It was not yesterday. It was Tuesday morning or Wednesday morning. Oh, I'm losing track of days here.
I know, I am too. All right. So earlier in the week, the CIF had a meeting. So was there any huge takeaways from that? You know, I did mention the girls flag football. I don't know if that was discussed at all. I mean, that's something that might be far in the future for our central section. But were there any bullet points that you could share with us?
I wish there was, but there really was nothing passed. I got lucky last year when I went to that meeting and they decided to change the playoff system in one day. I got lucky last year. This year, though, they did introduce a new item, is what they call it, that will be voted on in April to change the tiebreakers in the Central Section basketball playoffs from being within 2 rating points to being within seeding. So, like, for instance, if Centennial is a 4 seed and Bakersfield Christian is a 6 seed, well, then, since you're within 2 seeds, Bakersfield Christian would be ahead of Centennial, since Bakersfield Christian beat Centennial. But given the current format and how it's using rating points, that's not going to happen. Centennial is more than 2 rating points higher than Bakersfield Christian.
And, it seems like a lot of the boys' basketball scores in the Bakersfield area, some of those are surprising us, too. I know, was it Centennial had that tough game against Liberty? I think they won at the buzzer. So, hey, playoffs are right around the corner, Gabe. You know, I think at this, you know, this time next week, right, season's going to be done, a regular season. We'll be talking about playoffs and making some predictions. Usually those playoff brackets don't come out until early afternoon. Hey, maybe we'll be surprised. We'll be able to discuss some of the playoff brackets when they come out. So let's switch over to a little bit. And I you've done a great job in your show bringing in some guests, talking about the draft prospects of Jalen Moreno Cropper and Jake Haener. So, you know, I'd like for everybody to hear out there, what are you hearing? Are they going to be drafted at all? I think one of the projections has Cropper going at, you know, third or fourth round, and maybe in Jake Haener, he's rising, right? So, you know, I think a lot of teams are really finally seeing what Jake Haener is capable of.
Yeah, if we're talking about the Sanger native and former Buchanan Bear, Jalen Cropper, I think you're talking about a guy who has speed to play in the NFL. And I think we're seeing his speed after the catch. If he's able to have a lot of speed before the catch, if he's able to get separation, you know, getting open as a receiver, obviously that's going to help you get drafted. I think we're going to learn a lot about his draft stock next month at the combine and at the pro day. If Jalen Cropper runs a 4.440 or a 4.340, which I think he's capable of doing, he's getting drafted, Paul. He's getting drafted day two, I think. It's going to be all about his speed. I think that's what NFL teams are looking more at. Look at who's in the Super Bowl, right? Devontae Smith, fast guy, maybe not the biggest guy, but he's fast and he gets open. Same for A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown's stronger physically, but he's also smaller, you know, in stature. So I think you're looking at NFL teams kind of getting away from those Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones types. You don't have to be 6'3", 6'4" to be a starting NFL receiver. You can be 6 foot tall or 6 foot one like Jalen Cropper and just be fast and be a burner. And so that's what has Jalen Cropper trending upward in his draft stock. And another thing too, right? You might look at the East-West Shrine Bowl and say, oh, Cropper didn't have a good game. He only had 2 catches. How is he going to improve his stock? Here's the dirty secret. NFL teams don't watch the Shrine Bowl. I don't know if anyone knows that, but they actually watch the practices before the Shrine Bowl, and then some stick around for the Shrine Bowl itself, but really, they want to get a first look, and that's it. So Cropper did a good job in practices. That's all that matters to NFL teams. As for Haener, he was just named the Senior Bowl Practice Player of the Week. He's going to suit up here in about an hour at 11:30 on the NFL Network, so we're going to see Haener, you know, try to impress the scouts. And I think what's most impressive about Jake Haener isn't his accuracy, isn't his ability to improvise, and those are all good traits about him, but the most impressive thing to me is his mind, is between his ears, because many times last year, he was able to audible, he was able to call out of certain plays and make them better. And as an offensive coordinator, that can frustrate you sometimes because you're like, Jake, I called for this play, why are you doing this? But it just shows that Jake knows the playbook so well, and he can pick up schemes, you can pick up different concepts so easily. That's what NFL teams really want. The knock against his size is understandable, I guess, but we just saw Brock Purdy carry a team to the NFC Championship. Well, actually, carry might be a bit of a stretch. He quarterbacked a team to the NFC Championship. So I think stature doesn't matter. It matters what's between your ears. Jake Haener has a lot of that. And when you add in that he's the most accurate quarterback in Fresno State history, when you add in that he is a very good guy on the run, a lot of people don't say he's mobile, but he is mobile. He's able to get out of the pocket. He had to last year several times because of the offensive line. I think he would be a great day two pick for a lucky NFL team.
And he's got moxie. I mean, he's got confidence, and he's got a great personality as well. Yeah, good review there, Gabe. Really appreciate that. Hey, I heard a hot rumor, too, that you're going to be heading on over to Carruthers. There's a Carruthers Girls Showcase going on today. Let me just say the teams that are playing. You guys head on over. That would be really cool. So Fresno Sanger's playing it at 11, Washington Union, Kern Valley at 12:30. Bakersfield Christian, Lincoln of Stockton at 2 o'clock, at 3:30 Central in Oakland Tech. 5 o'clock, Sierra Pacific and El Diamante. That's going to be a really good game. And then Carruthers and Esperanza, the showcase, the headliner, I guess you could say, at 6:30. I want to mention, too, Gabe, the Central and Oakland Tech game. So, you know, I was at the Clovis East and Clovis West game last night. I happened to be sitting next to the Oakland Tech coach. Why? What a surprise. So we talked for pretty much the whole game until I left at the beginning of the fourth quarter. But, yeah, I really enjoyed talking with him. They got the 11th ranked team in the state. They're playing Central today. But he had a lot of good questions for me. I really appreciated him because he's asking about the landscape of Clovis, you know, the proximity of the schools, when this school opened, when that school opened. So yeah, I was really impressed by him and, you know, just his willingness to ask questions, right? You don't get that from a lot of coaches. So really appreciate that. So again, Girls Showcase. So can I confirm that you're going to be there doing some announcing?
Yes, I'll be doing a couple games as the PA announcer. I was able to work that out with Carruthers, and I'm just excited to be there. I like going to Carruthers. One of my favorite towns in the Central Valley.
Yeah, you guys should go down there and check it out. So all day girls basketball. Gabe, can you tell the excitement in my voice today, man? You were able to come here to First String Sports and help set up a little bit, man. But I'm excited. Logan Kilbert's in the house coming on after the break. But Tom Goodwin's coming in. Man, I brought my baseball cards. I brought all kinds of cool stuff, man. This is great.
I'm excited for you. I wanted to bring something up real quick, Paul, if you allow me. St. Joseph beat Mission Prep last night, 86-69. How many times do you see a team have two guys with double-doubles? Tunde had 24 points and 14 rebounds, and then their big center, 6'9", Caden Hamilton, had 22 points and 15 rebounds. And this is the third best team in the section according to Max Preps. Just saying. Just saying.
Yeah, I know. And then Mission Prep, I mean, they're going to be a tough out too.
Yeah.
Come playoff time.
They're going to be an 8 seed most likely, and then we can see them here against Clovis West likely in the quarters or something like that.
Wow, all stuff to look forward to. Gabe, good job by you. Appreciate you, my friend. Talk to you soon.
All right, thank you, Paul.
All right, coming up after the break, we got Logan Kilbert, Sierra High School basketball star, in the house on 1430 ESPN.
Listen to Sportsline, the Bulldog Hour, every weekday at 2 p.m. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome back to Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Metters, here at First String Sports. Come on down here to First String Sports for sure. This is definitely the place to be today. I say that every week, but man, yeah, you guys got to come down here again at the top of the hour, a little after 11 o'clock. Tom Goodwin's coming in the house, Fresno State legend, 14-year MLB career. To be signing a couple things. In the back right behind me, we have a Fresno State chair, a Central Grizzly chair. He's going to be signing those. We're going to be raffling those off. So make sure you come down here to First String Sports. I also want to thank Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating. You know, it's 52 degrees out there. It's a beautiful day. Man, it's like 52 degrees, but you don't even need a jacket. I mean, it just feels so nice and clean and crisp out there. And we got Logan Kilbert in the house. So Logan Kilbert plays for Sierra High School. Logan Kilbert scored. He had a 53-point game already this year, and he has 2,000 points in his career, which, according to Central Section historian Bob Arnett, it's like, what, you're the 25th player to do it? Or
yes.
25th player in Central Section history. And guess what, guys? He's got more to come. Not only this year, obviously, right? A couple more games and in playoffs, but he's only a junior. Right, so he's already putting up points at a historic place. Chieftains, I believe, are you 22-4 now? Does that sound about right?
Yes.
12-0 league. So after last night's win against Yosemite, right? Mm-hmm. So 22-4. So Logan, in the Yosemite win, you had what, 30? Well, first of all, welcome, man. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So what, you had 23 points in last night's win against Yosemite, right? Sierra against Yosemite, that's always. In any sport, that's a battle, right? That's a rivalry. That's a rival game. So what was working last night? Was it team defense? What were you guys focusing on last night?
So last night we actually brought out a new defense. We didn't go man. We're bringing out a new defense for playoffs and stuff. So that was working.
So what type? Wow, I don't want to spoil it. I mean, there's film out there, right? Was it a 2-3? Was it a trap deal? Was it a 1-1-2-2? What'd you guys throw out there?
It was a 1-2-2.
I like a 1-2-2. So where'd you play on defense, though? Did you have you up top so you could get some steals and dunks? Or?
So I was on the bottom trying to read everybody.
Okay.
So
that's important because, right, when the ball is opposite, you got to make sure you go over and fill that gap, right?
Yeah.
The coach really focusing on that.
Yeah,
you got to get those backside rebounds, too. All right, so which game did you score your 2,000th point in?
It was against Parlier.
Okay.
At home. So that was pretty cool.
And that was the same game you scored 53?
Yes.
So you scored 53 points, and you got your 2,000th point.
Correct.
Oh, my gosh. All right. So you probably blew by it. I mean, could you imagine that day being even more special, right? So not only do you break a school record with 53 points, but you get your 2,000th. Like, do you have that in your mind? Like, oh, maybe I'll hit 30 or something like that. But could you ever imagine you're going to score 53?
No. So I kind of knew I was 41 points away, and the whole team kind of knew, so – I'm just glad they found me in the beginning of the game. And once I got to around 43, I knew the record was 47,
okay,
the previous record. So that was my next goal in mind in that game.
And how did you score? How did you score the 53rd point? Do you remember?
So,
your final bucket.
Yeah, I think I got a steal and a layup.
Okay. And whose record do you break? Do you know? Do you know whose record? So somebody had 47?
Yeah, somebody had 47.
All right. and you score and you scored 53. All right, yes. So how would you describe your game? So you're pretty tall. Are you 6'3", 6'4"? What are we listing you at? Say 6'4".
6'4".
All right, that sounds great. All right, 6'4". So I've seen a lot of clips on you on social media, and you can shoot the three. Your mid-range game is on point. You got a lot of dunks this year, but how would you describe your game? Are you a slasher? Are you a setup guy? Are you a one-on-one guy?
I would say I'm more of a slasher than a shooter, but I can shoot the three if I'm open.
Do you like to work down low and then come up? You know what I mean? Just kind of pick your spots. Well, let me ask you this. Does your coach give you a lot of freedom in your offense?
Yes. So we have a couple of plays where I can post up. I would say that's like one of my strong points in my game is my post up game.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of those.
Okay. All right. What has been your favorite dunk this year? Probably that one at Sanger and that, right? That was a pretty tasty one.
Yeah. Right? Actually, there's another one against Liberty. So it was an inbounds play. I was inbounding it. I hit Chandler, and then I went for a back cut. He hit me. And then the weak side defender helped over, and I dunked on him.
All right. Yeah. So how many dunks do you have this year? Six, seven, eight, or a little bit more?
Probably 10 plus.
Well, 10 plus. All right, 10 plus. All right, do you remember the first time you were able to dunk it? You dunk it as a freshman? Could you dunk yet?
So I was dunking my eighth grade summer. So we were in like a warehouse, and I just went up and I got it. So that was pretty cool.
Off 1 foot?
Off 1 foot, yes.
Can you confirm that it was regulation? Was it 10 feet? Was it really 10 feet? Like, was it a warehouse, but was it – like what kind of warehouse was it? Were those adjustable rims?
No. All right. It was set. Right. It was set.
All right. Just want to confirm that. All right. So how about in a game? What was your first dunk?
In a game. So it was last year, towards the end of last year. Me and my point guard were on a fast break. Nate Kempin, he threw me a bounce pass, and I just went up, and I got it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, what would have happened if you would have missed it?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I actually had three dunks that game.
Oh, you had three. So that was the first of three. So once you saw that first one down, you were like, oh, man, this is golden.
You get more confidence as you get
exactly, one. Exactly. So you guys are having a really good season, right? And yes. You guys are winning a lot of basketball games. I think, are you guys going to be in Division IV? Is that what the talk is?
We're the one seed in D3.
In D3. One seed in D3. Okay. What were your goals coming into this season? Did you have goals with your teammates or some personal goals or some goals that you talk about with the coach?
Yeah, I would say one goal was to get closer with the team. I feel like we're all pretty close now. Another goal would be to try and get closer to 2,000. I never thought I'd get 2,000 this year. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And you're at 20. Right now you're at, 29 points a game. All right.
Yes.
Leading the central section. What do you love about playing basketball for Sierra High School?
Basketball at Sierra High School, it's sort of like the main sport up there.
Yeah. Do you feel like there's a big crowd, like the people are with you, like, right? Like you go there and you feel supported by the community. Is that really cool?
Yeah, it's a great community. They usually every home game, it's pretty packed.
Yeah.
Because the girls play before us.
Okay.
So it's just a strong community in total.
And the girls are pretty good too, right?
Yes.
The girls are pretty good.
They're like 23-3.
Yeah. Yeah, they're a really good team this year. All right. So your father, Dan, he's the women's basketball coach at Reedley. And I remember your brother, Preston, watching him at San Joaquin Memorial and Clovis West. And that's where I met your dad as well. So you grew up in a basketball family. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But what are some of your first memories about playing basketball? Like, do you remember, having one of those little hoops with the little basketball and putting that in? Or what are some of your first memories about basketball?
Some of my first memories are when we got the basketball court installed in our backyard. And I'd play against my brother. And I could never score because he'd always just block me. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, we're going to get into that a little bit. Really cool story about the basketball court that's in your yard. So I heard also that you have gone to Switzerland, right? You've gone to Switzerland a lot in the summer for basketball camp. So how did that all begin? And just describe what those experiences are like.
So my dad, he actually like runs the camp over there. I believe it's the largest camp in Europe, but I could be wrong. But that's always a cool experience. It's like a second family over there. Grew up with those guys. I believe I've been going ever since I was 7. So it's just basketball.
Yeah.
Really.
And so you've been going since you were 7. Are there some kids that you still stay in contact with that you've met throughout those times? Like you text each other or there's some relationships that you've built during those times?
Yeah. I'm pretty close with all the coaches and the like this last year I met a couple kids still in touch with. And yeah, I don't know if the name Tom Sterner rings a bell. Mm-mm. Okay, but he's like a coach. Coached like the Toronto Raptors and stuff.
Okay. All right. So he's there. Yeah. What's the weather like there?
It depends from year to year.
It's in the summer.
Yeah. Like
right?
1 year, it was like freezing cold. Another year, it was like nice, warm. So that's pretty cool.
All right. So talk about your dad being the women's basketball coach at Reedley College. But you've been through a lot in your life, right, so far. Your mom passed away when you were 3.5 years old to cancer. Mm-hmm. In what ways does her like spirit still live with you and motivate you through basketball and life?
So I wear the number 34.
Yeah.
Because that's how old she was when she passed. And that's really how I honor her.
Yeah. That's great. And something that really neat that came through that was Regis and Kelly, right? Mm-hmm. Of the TV show.
Yeah.
They got a letter from your mom's best friend. And told of the situation. So they reached out, and you mentioned it a little bit, right, earlier in the mm-hmm. show about the basketball court. So they came and built a basketball court in your yard in Clovis, right?
Yes.
And it's still there today?
Yes, that was really cool.
That's really neat. So, and you had a couple special guests, right, that came in and helped, I guess we could say, christen the court. So what, so what was that experience like, and what do you remember from all that?
So I remember I heard a knock at the front door. I remember going up to the door, I opened it, and there's just a bunch of news cameras. So I went and ran and grabbed my dad. And then later that day, the Lopez brothers came, and they shot with us in the backyard, which was pretty cool.
So how old were you at that time?
I was like 3.5, 4.
3.5, 4 years old.
Yeah.
So you remember the TV cameras there, and you had no idea.
Yeah, I was just stunned.
So what else do you remember? What are some of your memories, I guess I should say, being on that basketball court and shooting? You mentioned how your brother would, right, block your shot and pick on you out of those games, but playing out there. But what are some things that you remember about playing on that court growing up?
I would say just, like, inviting people over, playing pickups, 3-on-3s, 4-on-4s. That's always been something we've done.
Did your dad go out there and shoot around with you guys?
Yeah, we always play shooting games.
All right, but like, was there a time when you were able to beat your dad in anything, right? Is there a moment? Is that something you could say, you know, on the radio, or is he going to get you in trouble, right? Was there a moment where you could beat your dad in something?
Yeah, so probably around my freshman year, I could start beating him in shooting contests.
In shooting contests?
Yes.
All right, and what was that like? Like, just like three-pointers or just like playing horse?
So we play free throws out of 10, whoever can make the most. And I believe he shot like 8 out of 10. I went 9 for 10.
Oh, yeah. So, all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You could shoot a 9 out of 10, probably with your eyes closed right now. All right. So when the Lopez twins came, that was cool. That was awesome. How about your brother, man? You know, I have a brother, too. I'm the older brother. I remember times, you know, picking on him and beating him up and making him cry, and he'd go in the house and cry to mom or dad or whatever, right? Did you have any of those moments with your brother where you maybe run in the house crying?
Yeah. Got a little angry sometimes when I lost. That's all right. It's part of growing up.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You throw the basketball against, you know, Adam or against the fence right there.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Didn't want to lose.
That's right. That's cool. Who are your favorite NBA players, or who are your favorite basketball players?
Favorite NBA players.
You got some guys you like to watch?
Yeah, I like to watch Curry. I like to watch KD.
What do you like about, obviously Steph. Steph is Steph, right? He's absolutely amazing. What do you like about Kevin Durant? Just that he could score anywhere on the court in any right, any capacity.
I like how efficient he is. So that's something.
Yeah, he is, right? I mean, close to 7 feet tall, if not 7 feet tall, long arms. What else do you enjoy besides basketball? Talking to Logan Gilbert here at Sierra High School. But what else do you enjoy besides basketball? Are you just a pure basketball junkie, or do you got some other things that you like?
So I actually play football. I play track. Or I run track. And then I play baseball as well.
So you're doing all three sports?
Four.
Four?
Yes.
Right, four.
This football season.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. So you, Sierra plays, you go back and forth between 8-man football and 11-man football, and you played receiver, right?
Yes.
How many touchdowns do you have this year?
I had 30 touchdowns.
30 touchdowns. And what, like 1,600 yards?
Yeah, yeah, pretty close.
Did you play football growing up too, or is that just something you picked up like when you went to Sierra High School?
I just started last year.
Oh, just last year as a sophomore?
Yeah.
All right, and so you just go out and you just ball out for 30 touchdowns this year. All right, so what do you like about football? What's fun about football?
Well, it's sort of like three flags up, in my opinion.
All right.
Just throw it up and just jump and get it.
Well, no, who can guard you? You're 6'4", right? Who is your quarterback this year?
Aaron Irvine. He's pretty good.
All right. Really so a lot of times you just have a play where it's just like, just throw me the ball. I'll go get it.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you guys have playoffs, right?
Yeah, we are in 8-man playoffs.
Yeah.
We won the first and second round, and we made it to the finals against Fresno Christian at Fresno Christian. That was a great game.
Yeah.
But we ended up losing by 3.
Okay, yeah. I remember seeing that, right? Fresno Christian's had a dominant 8-man flag football team, right? Yeah. So obviously you enjoy basketball more, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. What do you have any future college plans? Do you have any ideas what you want to do in the future? Again, you're only a junior. You got your senior season ahead of you. But what? Let's start with this. What's your dream college?
Dream
you
college.
You can go anywhere you want.
Anywhere. I'm going to say Oregon.
Why Oregon?
I like the jerseys.
You like the jerseys? What, multiple jerseys? You got a lot of options, right?
Yeah.
You like that court? You like the court they play
on? I do. I think it's different. I like it.
Well, it's different. That's first. Yeah. Sometimes when I scroll through the channels and I come across an Oregon basketball game, I'm like, oh my gosh, that court, it's an eyesore sometimes. But all right, so the jerseys, the cool jerseys, you know, what's your GPA right now too, Logan?
4.0.
So you are a model student. You are a part of the 2,000 point club, school record in points, busted 53 against Parlier. Probably going to be the top seed in Division III.
Yes.
Right? So what would be the perfect end to this season playing at Sound Arena, right? It has to be.
Yes, yes, and winning one.
And winning one.
Yes.
All right, Logan, congratulations. You have an inspirational story, and all best to you. And, you know, I think you got a bright future ahead of you, and you know, I just keep doing what you're doing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You bet. All right, coming up after the break, we're going to be talking with Major League Baseball player, 14-year vet, Tom Goodwin, here on 1430 ESPN.
Listen to Super Bowl 57 on your local sports leader, 1430 ESPN.
Step inside, walk this way, you and me, babe. Hey, hey!
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
We're here at First String Sports, 1430 ESPN Radio. Come on down here. In between Herndon Avenue and Sierra Avenue, First String Sports on Blackstone. Come check it out. This is going to be a great next hour. We got Tom Goodwin. I'm looking at him right now. He is here at First String Sports. Come on down here. He's waving at me, man, because look, check this out, Mr. Goodwin. Look, we got your Central Grizzlies chair right here. We got some hats. We got your Fresno State stuff. We can't wait to talk to Tom just a second. You guys know him and love him. We're talking about the good old days at Central and Fresno State, talking about his gold medal Olympics team that he was on. I believe he was the youngest guy on the Olympic team in 1980, right? Seoul, Korea, right? Youngest member of that team. First round draft pick of the Los Angeles Dodgers, my team. I know we're the flagship of San Francisco Giants, but the Dodgers were my team. And I got a stack of baseball cards here to prove it, right? I got Tom Goodwin's rookie card right here with, 1989, number one draft pick here. 14 seasons for Los Angeles Dodgers, Rockies, Rangers, Giants, Cubs. Tons of stolen bases, man. 369 career stolen bases, and 2018 World Series champ as a first base coach for the Boston Red Sox. Now he's a roving minor league instructor for the Atlanta Braves. You know, and I got to give a shout out to our guy, man, our mutual friend, Brian Marsubian. Subs, you know, you guys know him, Buchanan baseball coach, incredible guy. I mean, everybody loves Subs. And he played on that for Fresno State, teammate of Goody. So I got a good relationship with Brian. I said, Brian, hey, any chance, this is about, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, any chance, you know, we could maybe ask Tom Goodwin to come on the show. I was thinking a phone conversation if he goes to spring training. So I end up calling Goody, and I'm like, hey, can you come on February 4th? I don't know where you're going to be at. You know, we could do a phone conversation, 20 minutes, whatever. He's like, hey, I'm coming into Fresno. I'm going to be in Fresno for the alumni game. Perfect. Can you spare an hour or so to come in? So sure enough, he's here. Come on down here to First String Sports. There's a lot of people here already, man. They're getting their Letterman's jacket done. There's going to be that raffle that I talked about. Going to be autographing a couple chairs. So come on down here to First String Sports. Tom Goodwin coming up after the break here on 1430 ESPN.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
You found us here on 1430 ESPN. We are very excited that you did. Well, why? I mean, hopefully you can hear the excitement in my voice. I have Tom Goodwin here at First String Sports. Tom Goodwin, Fresno State legend, Central Grizzly legend, 14-year Major League Baseball career, World Series champ. Tom's in the house today. Well, because Fresno State's got an alumni game. We're going to talk about that a little bit in his times at Fresno State. But he's been in town for a couple days here. First of all, Tommy, thanks for coming in, man. This is going to be an absolute treat, man. I can't wait. This is a lot of fun.
Paul, thanks for having me. You know, it's just an absolute honor, obviously, to be here. Come out here today and, you know, just shoot some knowledge about some sports in the Valley and, you know, talk about a little Fresno State baseball and whatever else that we need to talk about.
Absolutely.
Today.
So
it's going to be fun.
How often do you come to Fresno, right? You're living in Texas, right, a little bit, right?
Put me on the spot right now.
I know. How often do you come to Fresno? I mean, I'm just saying this is an honor, right, for everybody to hear about you.
But not often, not as often as I should. I should come a little bit more just to see my mother. You know, she's getting up there in age, so I usually get down now that I have the job with the Braves. I'm probably down 2 or 3 times a year, because I have more time off. It's always nice to come to town and see Mom and come out and see some of my friends, all the guys that, you know, either played with or grew up with. So it's always a good time.
Are there some restaurants? Are there some certain places, like when you're driving through Fresno, like, oh, I remember that place. Oh, wait, that place is closed down. What's going on here, right? Are there some places you've got to go to when you come to Fresno?
There's a lot of that. A lot of stuff closed down, but then a lot of new developments going up, especially around, you know, Central High, where the new Central High is now, where it just used to be, you know, nothing.
Open,
basically open. And now with the school there and, of course, the housing there, I still haven't driven out to Central West to see my old stomping grounds, so I might need to get out there before I leave. But it's always nice to come back just to see some of the new stuff, some of the new things, some of the old stuff you wish was still there that's not there now, just because so many memories were there as far as growing up. But always nice to be back.
And the Central Campus, if you drive by it, it's going to look different. There's a new high school there, Justin Garza. I know the baseball field is named after you, Tom Goodwin Field. Are you putting on the cleats? You strapping on the cleats today to play, or are you just going to hang out with your guys?
Just going to hang out. I'm going to support Terrence Frazier today. Terrence will be representing the old guys, the new old guys, I guess. I guess they stopped having the old timers game. I said, well, we're the old timers now, so we can just we can start up a 50 and over type of thing and go. But I probably still wouldn't play in that because that might not be pretty to watch. But, you know, Terrence gets out there and has a good time and likes to, you know, chatter a little bit. So it's always good to be out there and just to see baseball. Baseball's back, and it's always a good time of year. I've always enjoyed it. And, you know, February kind of comes around, you kind of start getting ready. It's funny because my body will feel great throughout the whole, you know, wintertime, throughout the whole off season. And then February gets here and, you know, maybe my shoulder starts to hurt a little bit. And all my knees, because they know that that was the time where we were supposed, where we're about to start up and you know, things were about to get ramped up again. And even now as I coach, things like that will happen. Like, man, why am I shoulder sore right now? I'm not even playing or throwing anymore. But yet it knows that this was the time for so many years.
It is. Yeah, you're preparing for spring training. And, you know, I want to ask you how much the Central Valley means to you, right? When your name comes up, people just have fond memories of the you know, the baseball teams and your time at Central. And you know, I think it was really, really cool when you had the parade for the 2018 Red Sox. I don't know, were you at those big parades? Yeah, you're top of something,
duck
right?
Boat, the duck boat,
the duck boat, and you were wearing a Fresno State sweatshirt, right? And people in the Central Valley, we saw that, right?
Oh,
we're like,
yeah.
Tom Goodwin, man, he's representing. He's representing Fresno State and the Central Valley. Why? What does the Central Valley mean to you? Why is it so important? Why was it important for you to wear that sweatshirt?
It means everything. It's where everything started for me personally. You know, started at Madison Elementary, where I went to, was right down the street from my house, and you know, continued on to Central High School, and then you know, finished up here at Fresno State. But just to have that type of balance and you know, structure and. You know, knowing that I really didn't want to leave home when it came to going to college. I wasn't sure if it was going to happen or not. I only took one recruiting trip. That was to Cal Berkeley. And I basically did that because my brother went to Cal. You know, you idolize your older brother. It's like, well, hey, you know, he's at Cal. And Cal kind of gave me a call. Said, hey, you know, come out. We'll take a look. Fortunately, nothing transpired from that trip. It was a nice trip. It's the only trip that I had taken. And then when I got back, there was messages kind of waiting for me from Coach Rupsich. You know, saying, hey, I hope you didn't make a decision yet. We still want to talk to you. I think there was some kind of time frame where the baseball had to wait to talk to you back then. So we might have, you know, did a little something, just a little bit illegal. It wasn't that illegal. Come on now. And then that's just kind of how it happened. But, yeah, being in the Valley, being from here, born and raised here, born and bred, really means something. Means something to me. Means something to a lot in the area. And, you know, just trying to, you know, do what I can to, you know, it's not even give back. It's just to show the love that was shown to me. And then if giving back happens in the process, then that's just how it happens.
And you and I, we did a baseball clinic back in the day together. And that's where I met you. And with Tim Thiessen at Emmanuel, and Steve Hosey was there. Zosky was there. Mark Gardner. I mean, I went back and looked at those pictures. And those are just great memories. So that's part of giving back to that. You know, but growing up, going to Central High School, you know, what was baseball always your favorite sport? I know you play a little, you know, you play football as well. We're going to get into that a little bit, and basketball as well. But when did you first, like, really fall in love with baseball? When did baseball become your number one?
We'll get to that in a minute. I just want to let the people out there know that you had a pretty nice jump shot back in the day. You know, we have the photos to prove that there was some follow through, there was some form. Yeah, there was a lot of good stuff going on.
So yeah, the story goes. So
I'm surprised Boyd Grant didn't give you a call back then. Come on now.
Well, at that clinic, right? The rain started to come down, so we had to escape to the gym. So we had about 45 minutes to mess around in the gym, and I had one of those like disposable cameras back in the day. So I was taking pictures, right? Boom, boom, boom. There's Goody throwing that ball up, lobbing it to himself and Duncan. So we got proof of that. Well, we got proof that you could throw it down back in the day.
A couple
right?
misses in there too, but that's
a couple misses.
But that comes with the territory.
But you could throw it down, and then you had a nice jump shot. So yeah, there's one shot of me and you shooting it simultaneously. Shooting the basket. So yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. But those were good days, man. Those,
yeah, fun
with,
times.
With those
times.
Alumni days. So that's just a testament to you coming back. But when did you first fall in love like with baseball?
Oh.
Baseball became like your number one.
I don't know when it was actually number one. But I know I love the game. I used to play Mark Jones, my cousin. He actually does basketball. He does radio. He's
Mark Q. Jones
analyst. Yeah, Mark Q. Jones, Coach Q.
Coach
he
Q.
does. He does the analyzing on for the Fresno State Bulldogs. But anyway, so we were close in age.
Okay.
Closer in age than my brothers and myself. So he and I, 2 years apart. We used to get we'd go to Madison. Get home at the same time, and we'd just come home, and we called it one hit. And he'd throw a pitch to me, I'd hit it. We'd go get it across the street. Don't tell my mama this, because we weren't supposed to be in the street at that time, but we would go across the street, get the ball, come back, do it again. You know, I'd throw to him, and he'd hit one. So that's kind of the game that we played until everybody got home after school. And so I knew then that baseball was something that I really enjoyed. But I'll be honest, I probably enjoyed basketball the most. I was probably better, or probably the best at football, just because I could run, I had some speed, I just wasn't big enough. And then baseball was the one I ended up playing, which it was kind of weird because it was baseball was just at the end of the year. You know, it was, you finish your football, you finish basketball, and then, baseball, I mean, there's something to do. And I loved it. I didn't like to run track. It was baseball and track at the same time. I didn't really like to run track. So baseball just kind of gradually came into play. And then, you know, you just kind of figure out that, okay, you have little hand-eye coordination, and I can go run down a couple balls in the outfield. I didn't really have much of an arm, but, you know, if it needed be, I could play the infield as well. So it just – and you just continue on, and you continue to play. And honestly, I think that's more missing today than, you know, it was back then, because you were allowed to just play all sports and then figure out which one you liked. Instead of now, you're almost forced into one. You might not even like it, but you're either good at it or, you know, somebody thinks you're good at it. I don't want to put any parents on blast right now, but somebody thinks you're good at it. And then they're just forcing you to do that one thing. And then even when you get to high school, they want you to play one sport. They don't want you to do, you know, too many, especially three. They definitely don't want three. Two is a push, but they definitely don't want three. But I think you get so much, you learn so much from the other sports, how to throw it all together, and especially for baseball, because there's hand-eye coordination. You know, there's footwork, where you have a lot of footwork in basketball. You know, there's a lot of hand-eye coordination in, you know, football, where you're trying to either, you know, get somebody off of you or trying to get by a block or something. Yeah. So you put all those things together, and then that would help. That helps the other sports, you know. And then baseball is patience. A lot of patience you have to have in baseball. I mean, I might not. I'm in center field. I might not get a ball for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But then when I get, I got to be ready to go get it, because it could be the game on the line. So you learn so much about, you know, yourself, about the game itself. And then, you know, just being a good teammate, teamwork, playing together. You got relays in the outfield. You're throwing it to a shortstop. Shortstop throwing it home. You know, you got men on base. I'm trying to move him over to third base now, so I got to do what I need to do to move him over. So things like that, I think, help our youth become better at sportsmanship when they learn how to play the game the right way. And also, okay, I played this game. I can put it over here for now. I'm going to go play another game, whether it be soccer. I mean, it could be swimming. It could be anything. But give yourself a break from maybe the main one, which you think you have, you know, or think you're going to do. Give yourself a break from that, because you have to learn to miss it and love it to know, like, okay, this is what I want to do. Instead of being forced to do it, I don't know if I like one of these other sports or not, because I never had a chance to play it. But now I played it. Okay, I played football. Not big enough. I like it. Not big enough. I'll get crushed. I'm out. I enjoyed basketball. Inside, you know, it's warm. I'm not tall enough. Didn't have the handles. Okay, I like it, but I can't play it. Baseball, wow, that's my sport. I can run. Don't have to be this big guy, big burly guy. Don't have to be tall. Can be whatever. Just have to have pretty good hand-eye coordination and the love for the game. And it ended up where I loved to play the game, and it was just a perfect match.
Talking with Tom Goodwin here live at First String Sports, you mentioned the specialities, right? So, yeah, sports have become pretty specialized a lot. And you probably see that, you know, in your career now as a coach, right, where, you know, it's good to play other sports. It's good to learn about the team aspect, right? And some of that's been lost. You know, when you're coaching right now, when you're coaching a specific, you know, drill or, you know, a specific part of the game, do you feel like that's been lost a little bit in youth sports? Do you feel like guys are behind a little bit or ahead when you see guys come in and, you know, the fundamentals part of the game?
When we get them in the professional level, they're behind. Because, and especially the international player. International players, all they're after is showcases. We want to showcase our guy. He can hit far. He can throw hard. So they don't learn, you know, how to come in and get a ground ball. Or the you know, the footwork that it takes to do a reverse pivot and make a throw. They don't learn those things where, I mean, I learned those things right away at Fresno State.
Yeah.
From Coach Tim Payton, Coach Mike Rupsich, and Coach Bob Bennett. It was fundamentals, fundamentals, fundamentals. And we did it until we got it to where, you know, to where we could make something happen on the field. And it probably took, and I mean, I've said this a lot, it probably took until I got to Double A, until we started to talk about some of the things that I had learned at Fresno State. And I was like, wow. I mean, I was ahead of the game.
Advanced, yeah.
I mean, I was ahead of the game defensively as far as what it took to be a really good outfielder and what it took to be a teammate. And so I think that's, you know, for sure international wise. And then now the players here, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of that going on as well, where they're just out for, you know, launch angle and, you know, trying to get their, you know, their velocity up as far as pitching and doing some of the things. And I'm not saying those things are bad, but I'm just saying I think the team aspect gets lost because we focus so much on an individual that we don't think about what it's like to become a team, to go out there with this guy that's, you know, doing the same. He's doing the same thing I am, you know, working just as hard. And then, you know, not putting myself in his shoes to where I'm like, I need to play for him today.
Yeah.
I need to do it for this guy today because he's doing the same thing for me.
Yeah. So. Was there a point growing up, Tom, you mentioned how you know, when you loved baseball, right? You mentioned football, you could catch a pass and run. When did you realize that you were faster than everybody else? Right? Is there a specific moment like, man, I ain't guarding Tommy today? Like, right? Was there a specific moment where you just started smoking everybody?
There was a time in high school where I was probably a sophomore, and we had, you know, really, we had a really good varsity team. I played JV my freshman and sophomore year, football. And we had a really good varsity team, really fast varsity team. So I think one day we just all kind of lined up, you know, the running back. We had a real fast running back. We had some pretty fast receivers, but, and, you know, and nobody had really known what was going on. Everybody knew I was fast, but nobody really knew if I was
faster
than these guys.
Yeah, okay.
And we ran it one day, and it was just, I was out of there. And it was like, whoa, okay, this guy's got a little something. So, you know, from then on, we kind of knew. I mean, I think we knew before, because a lot of, like I said, a lot of times these older guys I'd played Pop Warner with when I was in the eighth grade, and they were in, or seventh grade, they were in the eighth grade, so I played with them as well. But yeah, that was just that time. And then there was a time, and I still remember Fresno State, Terrence Frazier, oh my goodness. In the dorm room, and we back with, I don't know if you remember, Andre Alexander, wide receiver with Fresno State. So Dre, you know, he's always chirping to Terrence, and I mean, I kind of stayed out of it. I mean, I'm like, I don't know if I'm faster than Andre or not. Who knows? But, you know, maybe I am, maybe I'm not. But Terrence was like, no, you can get him. You can get him. I said, all right, so whatever. So they're chirping, nothing happens. They're chirping, nothing happens. One day, it happens. Boom. Andre comes in. He's already, like, comes into the dorm room. I was at Steve and Terrence's dorm. He's like, let's go. I was like, all right, I guess this is it. It's on. So we're in the parking lot. And this guy on a scholarship for football. I'm on a scholarship for baseball. And here we are in the parking lot having a drag race almost.
Yeah,
whatever. I don't even know what I had on. I mean, I'm sure I had some sort of running shoes on, but I'm sure I had shorts. It was probably hot. And we get out there, and I get him. And the whole football team knows about it now. And you remember J.D. Williams.
J.D. Williams,
he was a guy that could run, too. And he didn't think I could beat him, or, you know, he knew it would be close. But he knows how fast Andre is. He plays against him every day in practice and obviously sees him during the games. And he just couldn't believe it. And then all of a sudden, oh, Andre, you know, well, yeah, he has had a bad hamstring. There was a whole bunch of excuses going. And I was like, Terrence was more the, you know, Terrence was my hype man.
Yeah.
Terrence was Don King at the time. So we just ran it, and, you know, and that was it. And that was another time I realized, I was like, because Courtney Griffin, a guy, he played at Fresno State and went to Central High, he'd always said I should come out for football. I was like, well, you know, and I know we want to get into that story a little later, but it was like, well, I mean, not now. I mean, I'm playing and, you know, this and that, but, you know, thanks for that and thanks for everything. But so, yeah, it was, but yeah, so there was a lot of competition between us, you know, between the athletes and the sports at that time, but it was friendly competition.
Absolutely.
And it was great. It was great to be a part of.
And that 1988 team, right, you talk about. Just the cast of characters, right? I mentioned Zosky, you did that clinic with, you know, Shevlet, you know, Steve Peirce, obviously, Hosey. I mean, just that's my favorite Fresno State team of all time. Even more than the football teams that won championships and all that, the basketball teams, right? That team, because it was special. Like, you read, it was like my senior year, right? So you read, you open up the Fresno B sports section, you're reading about Fresno State right on the front, right? Shevlet, 32 homers, or whatever, 32 game winning streak, and all this stuff. Well, I mean, what are you. When you look back, I mean, how fond are those memories, right? Like, was that like one of the greatest times of your life?
Great. It was a time, and I you know, put this on a caption once, I think, you know, truly the times of our lives, because there's a picture of us all, and we're kind of waiting to take the field, and it's like a shot from maybe the first or the second or third row on the third base side. So it's like a picture of us all, and we're all just sitting there, and we're, you know, everybody's looking a different way, like, what's going on? And I was just like, wow. You know, just the, and that, it brought back so many memories of, you know, just that year and just the down that we had, because we had one big down to start the year, and then here we go, you know. And coach just kind of, I still remember the trip home from San Diego. I think we might have lost 2 out of 3 or something happened there where, that we shouldn't have done, and he called every one of us to the front of the bus during that 6-hour trip. Each one of us came up there, you know, had whatever we said. I can't remember what he said, but I just remember the trip, like, whoa. This is, you know, this is serious business here. This is not, you know, I mean, it's 2 out of 3, okay, whatever. We were, I don't know, 9-6 or 8-6 or something like that. But it was a big deal to him because of either the way we played, the way we looked, you know, the way we handled ourselves on the field. Whatever it was, he saw it, he knew it, and it was the perfect time for us to kind of have a little awakening, if you want to call it
come
that.
Come to Jesus.
And come to Jesus moment right there, and then boom, you know, we just happened to take off right there. So it was special times. Steve Purse, I mean, can't say enough about this guy. You know, he was kind of the heart and soul of, because of the stature and, you know, the big swing, you know, playing second base, just giving up his body anytime and every time he had to, you know, the grunt when he put a, you know, when he put up his pants. And it was just, he was something. He was probably the leader of that team. Just because, not maybe all what he was saying, but his actions on the field and his love for one another.
And you hit, so you hit leadoff. Did he hit second, didn't he?
He hit second lot. Then he would hit six. Sometimes Oski would hit second. It was, we did have a, we had a set lineup probably about after the, you know, whatever that, whenever that, whenever we went to San Diego, we came back home. It was pretty set. And I think he was down in the lineup because I think Zosky was hitting second, I think. But I'd have to look that up, or somebody had to look that up. But we had the same lineup.
Yeah.
It was the same lineup from then on out. Once we got to the 30, you know, we started to, in the middle of that 32-game streak.
Yeah.
I mean, coach didn't even, you know, this was a coach who was hard, and, or at least we thought he was. He was like, when you guys want to practice today?
Yeah.
He's like, night practice, coach. All right, night practice it is. And then that was it. You know, Lance Shepard would go to me, hey, coach, you know, I think we need to practice tonight. Hey, night practice it is. You know, those are easy practices. VP, get the. You know, so it was, they were like, yeah, let's do that. Great. Better than on the line, running lines.
Yeah. All it is. I heard a legendary, those foul poles, man. Oh. Coach Bennett gets you going on those foul poles.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It
makes it you second guess lots of things in life.
Yes, it does. Yes. I still remember, I'm going to go back to the story, 1987, my first year there. And we had done something on the bases. We're doing a drill, did something on the bases. And, you know, Michael Stewart was on the team, Steve Bates. You know, a lot of these older guys who looked like men. I mean, I was a boy, and these guys, I'm like, I'm playing with men out here right now? What is going on? Michael Stewart, he's you know, football player, nicest guy in the world. Love Mike. So we're running these lines. You know, he's got us on the line, which is basically he run out however many yards, come back, gets to the line, he blows with a boop, we run it again. And we probably did 100 of them. And right in about number 70, Michael, we're running, we're tired. Michael Stewart, he's just running. He's like, he can't have us. He can't have, you know, talking about coach. Not going to get us today, coach. You're not going to get it. We're going to do this. We're going to do it. You know, we're going to finish. So that was inspiration, like, okay. You know, and he brought some football mentality over to the baseball field as well, which we probably needed some at that time. 87, we weren't a good team, but I didn't know a good team from a bad team then. I was just happy to be on the team, being my freshman year and all. So it was just like, okay, I guess this is how it is, but – we knew coming into 88 that we, you know, we're going to lose some guys like that. So some guys had to step up. Guys had to be ready to kind of be that person to be able to go to coach if something was going on with the team and just talk, because coach was down for talking. Yeah. Now, I mean, he had his ways, and we might not change him, but I think us getting it off of our chest let him see, like, you know what, these guys care. They put some thought into this, and I'm going to, you know, take it with a grain of salt, but I'm definitely going to listen to it. And, you know, so we were able to come to we had a really good relationship.
And then we got to take a break here, Tom. We're going to talk about a little bit more about the draft and your major league career and all the good stuff, all the fruits of your labor. Talking with Tom Goodwin here on 1430 ESPN.
Listen to Home Field Advantage Monday through Thursday at 3 p.m. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome back to Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Metters. Been talking with Tom Goodwin, Fresno State legend. If you missed the first part of the interview or you missed any of the shows, you could go to the 1430 ESPN Fresno website, go to podcast, go to Central Valley Sports Report, click on this date. It'll be right there. I mean, you got a podcast. If you missed the first half hour with Tom Goodwin, you got to go back and listen and talk about his days growing up, playing for Central High, some Fresno State stuff. Tom, I got to ask you a little bit more. We got to talk a little bit more of Fresno State. I mean,
let's do it.
And we're definitely gonna be talking about your career in the major leagues and coaching. But you know, so the draft comes along. I got the baseball cards to prove it again, right? So you got Hosey, Zosky, Goodwin, right? Those three names are synonymous. Hosey goes 14, right? Zosky goes 14 to the Giants. Zosky goes 19 to the Blue Jays, and Los Angeles Dodgers, right? Pick you at 22, right? Do you feel like it was a perfect time? Obviously, you know, first round draft pick, right? You feel like you were absolutely ready at that point in time in your Fresno State career. You mentioned how you get to Double A, you're like, man, I'm ahead of these guys fundamentally and everything, right? But you were absolutely prepared. It was the right move, right?
Well, okay, we can dig into that a little bit. I thought I was ready to play. The only thing was I had not. And probably since I was 8 or 9 years old, hit with a wooden bat. And the scouts would usually come to Fresno State and they would want us to take batting practice with it. And I was like, no, because I don't know how I'm going to hit with this bat. And, you know, you have to just take your chances. Yeah, I didn't want to sit there and break five bats in a row when I'm taking batting practice. They're like, this guy's swinging a wet newspaper up there. So I just decided not to do that. So I wasn't as confident about that part. Once I got drafted, signed, and went to Vero Beach with the Dodgers, but then it didn't take long to figure it out. I mean, you were asking about the sweet spot. Oh, the sweet spot on the aluminum bat is about 7 inches, but on the wooden bat it's about 3 inches. And I'm like, wow. Well, I mean, I don't know how many times I hit the sweet spot. I know a lot of my game was trying not to hit the sweet spot so I could just make it fall in front of the outfielders or bounce it off the plate and run something out. I mean, Coach Rupsich, bless his heart, he's on the ground, Tommy, on the, anytime I hit a fly ball, all is on the ground, Tommy, on the ground, on the ground, Tommy, on the ground. I had that etched in my skull for a long time. I'm like, Coach, thank you for that information, but guys are hitting fly balls now. I'm going to have to do something. There wasn't like 100% confident, but I was pretty confident that I was ready to embark on that next level and just kind of see what I could do. I mean, knowing what I knew as far as speed never goes into a slump, and Coach Payton always saying, just remember, when you get there, you got to show what you do. Show what you do. And I was talking to Nico Mitchell the other day, Fresno State, Nico, and he was, he just kind of asked me, and I said, I'm telling him the same thing. Show what you can do, whenever you're out there on the field. If it's pitching, show you can dot it in the outfield, show you can run it down, show your speed. I said, but it's a blessing and a curse, because once they know you can run, now during every drill, I have to be the first one. If I'm not the first one, good one, you're not hustling today. Something's going on. I'm like, Coach, I'm tired. I mean, I can't be the first one all the time. But people know. When they know, now all of a sudden, you might not be giving your best effort all the time. So there's a little, something in there to it, to where you're like, okay, I'm still trying to save some bullets. Sure. So I have some bullets left over if need be. But, there's always that certain part of it that's where it's like, well, let's just make sure you're putting that effort in. I say time and effort. If you put time and you put effort in, you'll never work a day in your life. I don't like to say, oh, hard work. I say, no. Just put the time in, put the effort in at your craft, and you'll never have to work on it. So that's kind of the motto that I try to, coach by now, live by now. don't make everything work, because work is checking in, checking out. Time and effort is, you could do it whenever you want to do it. I can go home and do some push-ups right now, or I can go home and do some push-ups at 8 o'clock tonight. I just need to make sure that I get some push-ups in or something like that, where work, okay, I'm on the clock, I'm off the clock, I'm done with it. Not a bad way to go about some things, but in the sports world, I think it's always, because your mind's always running, it's good to not totally just shut it off. I mean, it's good to get away from it, but it's good to not just totally shut it off and just kind of keep yourself involved because there's so many things that come in your head at night where you're like, oh, I got a pen and paper. I got to write this down. You know, I was like, oh, my goodness. I can't believe I'm thinking about this now. I didn't think about this yesterday. So there's so much, you know, things that go into it with, when it comes to that. So you never want to just completely shut off.
You talk about showcasing what you can do, right? So tell me if the story is true. So you hit in spring training, you hit a routine ground ball to second, or you did something and you flew to first base. I think you beat out a routine ground ball. Is that true? Is that when, like, people are like, oh, man, this guy's got something special, right?
Yeah, so it's true. I was with the Dodgers, spring training, who cares game. I'm coming in late. I think I don't even know why they had some of their starters were still in because Craig Jeffries.
Oh, yeah.
Was third base.
Okay.
Craig Jeffries was the third baseman. And, you know, so it was seventh, eighth inning, whatever it was. And we're playing Kansas City, so Dodgers are playing the Royals. I hit a two-hopper, third base. I didn't look at him. I'm just running. I hit it, I'm running. And so I don't know what he did. I don't know if he, you know, just took a little bit more time, whatever he did. Like you said, beat it out, base hit, and everybody's like, wow. You know, even he, I look back at him, I was like, you know, and I don't ask him, hey, what happened? I don't even care what happened. Hey, I'm on first base. And I don't think it was a situation to steal because I think it was one of those. And that's why I think he was playing back. So it wasn't like it was a hard hit right to, you know, he was back a little bit. But I think he just, the speed just kind of, you know, he underestimated the speed. Yeah. So that was probably 93 or maybe 92. Dodgers take me off the roster in 95. Kansas City picks me up. Mm-hmm. And I talked to the guy. His name was Steve Boros. At the time, I was one of the Kansas City guys. And he said, you want to know why we took a shot on you? He said, I remember back in 1992 when you hit a routine ground ball to third base. Not only did you busted your tail down there, but you ended up beating it out. He said, and that's why we picked you up. And honestly, that was the break I needed. I needed that break I didn't need to be at the Dodgers at the time. They had, you know, I think they had Strawberry. They had Eric Davis. Yeah. They had Brett Butler.
Yeah.
I more than likely wasn't going to crack that starting lineup. They're not going to take a young buck. That type of team is not going to have a young guy be a fourth or fifth outfielder. They would get a veteran to do that, which they had Mitch Webster at the time. So it was just a great opportunity for me to kind of sit back, breathe a little bit. Now, I was coming into a situation where there's Brian McCray, Vince Coleman, Felix Jose, the late, great Dave Henderson. I mean, these guys were in Kansas City at the time, too. So I was like, well, it's not a great situation, but it's a fresh situation. And then, lo and behold, 95 or 94, strike hits. And Kaufman, who's the owner of Kansas City, he's mad at the players. So he guts the whole, Hindu's gone. Felix Jose is gone. Brian McCray got traded. Vince, they let him go. He ended up coming back. But they let him go. So there was basically five outfield positions open that next spring training in 95, which started late as well. Five outfield positions. I was like, I know I can get one of these. That's what I'm thinking to myself. I can get one of these. You know, depending on who they bring in or who they had before, it didn't matter. I didn't care. I just knew that was opportunity. And, you know, and that's another thing I stress to the guys these days. Just be ready for the opportunity. It might not come. It might not come. But if it does, you'll feel so much better about yourself if you're ready for it and don't get it than if you're not ready for it and don't get it. Because that's what baseball is all about. The opportunities that come your way, you being prepared, you being ready, and then you pouncing on it. And that's basically what happened with me.
Talking with Tom Goodwin. So you go to Kansas City, steal 166 bags the first 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
I did my research. So you got 50, 66, and then 50. Yeah. So what was your mentality, right, when you got on first base? You mentioned a little bit how – you know, in that spring training game, right, you got on that, you know, two-hopper to third, but it wasn't the right opportunity to steal back, right? Did you have to really learn when you were stealing all those bags, like, when the right time? Because probably at Fresno State, you're like, I'm on first base, this is double, this is probably a triple, right? But when you get to pro ball, it's different, especially the major leagues. Did that take you a while to learn the little nuances? Again, you're coaching first base, too, you know, for Red Sox and Mets for all those years. You know, those little things, right, you got to pick your spots, you got to look at this, you got to look at that. Catchers, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, I wasn't a pick my spot type of guy. I was like, I'm going
just
type
go.
Of guy. Yeah, right. That was me because I knew that was my that's what put me above other guys was my mentality on the base pass. Now, yes, you know, there's certain times where the manager or third base coach is, you know, telling me not to go, or the first base coach is, hey, you know, not a good time here, 5-run lead, whatever it may be. And yes, did I get itchy? Of course. I mean, I was just as hard headed as the kids are today. When it comes to that, I want to go because this is what I can do. The guy's 1-7. I think I can get it anyway. So yeah, there was a certain mentality that I had to have and a certain learning process, which I'm still learning today. I mean, there are things that I learned last year that I had no idea, you know, about the game. And, I mean, we know how the analytics have come into the game. So I'm learning more and more on that. But as far as the physical going out, playing the game. Yeah. I mean, it's, there's stuff that there's, and that's the open-mindedness that you have to have as well, that I can learn something today. And I tell the guys, it's like if I say, if you can learn something, you got 140-something games out here, you know, and we'll be out here 160-something days. Just think how much smarter you're going to be if you learn something every day for 160-something straight, no matter what it is. It just could just be that, you know what, I'm better at putting my pants on my left leg first than my right.
Yeah.
It could be as simple as that.
Yeah.
But you're going to feel so much better about yourself. You're going to feel smarter. You're going to be like, wow. And then all of a sudden the game, you're going to be able to, and this is what I don't do well yet, and I'm trying to get better at it, but you're going to be able to see the game. This is what the good managers do. They see the game before it even, you know, before things happen. Or, you know, they're 2 innings ahead. We're in the 3rd inning, but they've already made a move in the 5th inning. And that's not easy to do. And I'm still trying to grasp my, you know, wits around it. Like, I have to be able to take myself out of the moment. And, you know, you have a good bench coach. You have a good coaches that are in the moment.
Yeah.
But you have to come out of the moment and be like, okay, we're going to have to get Peterson up, you know, at some point. You know, so let's make sure he's loose. It could just be a call down to the bullpen, or it could be, Peterson could be a pinch runner or something, or a pinch hitter on the bench. So just things like that that come into play, you know, when you're trying to organize a game plan, run a game, and then keep the guys involved, because it's like, hey, you know, coach used me here 4th inning last time. I might want to go in and stretch. Things like that. So to keep them ready so you don't ambush them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's definitely things like that.
I too want to ask you, and I just love talking to pro players, you know, the game a long time with baseball, basketball, football, whatever. Hall of Fame guys. Right, so you've coached a lot of guys. You've seen a lot of great players, yeah. Goody, right? Yeah. What's the difference between great player and the Hall of Fame guys? I mean, you've probably seen, you know, Frank Thomas. You play with Pudge and all these guys. Like, what's the difference between a great player and then the Hall of Famers?
I'll give you a similarity between both of them, because great players, you know, usually make it to the Hall of Fame. But not all of them do, but most of them do. Is their ability to not shy away from the big moment, and then not be affected if they fail in that big moment. Some players don't want to be in that big moment because they don't want to fail. They don't know how to do that. Some, to reverse that, don't want to be in that big moment because they don't know how to succeed. They don't know what that's going to bring. So they just rather not even be in that situation. And I've seen guys where you can see it in their faces. It's like, just, he doesn't want to hit right now. You know, he doesn't want to. He might be sitting on the bench. Maybe it's a guy who, you know, didn't start. He's a regular starter but didn't start that day. And now he's got to come up in a situation that he's not used to being in. He's not comfortable. Great players are like, let's go. You know, I mean, I've been down here for 3 innings hitting, making sure I'm ready, or, you know, throwing whatever it may be. So I think that's the separation between great, the Hall of Fame great, and then just your average good players. I said those guys, they'll take whatever comes with being a great player.
Yeah.
The good players, average players, they're just like, you know what, you know, besides maybe not having the talent, but they don't even want that situation. That was the one thing that I think helped me, you know, we haven't talked about Dusty yet, but I think Dusty had a trust in me. I wasn't a great player, barely a good player sometimes, but he trusted that I was going to be a prepared and ready player during that 7th, 8th, 9th inning if I had to come in and pinch hit. He trusted me. And when you have somebody that trusts you like that, it's like, instead of me sitting here like this, I'm sitting here like this now. I mean, I got my chest up a little bit. I got maybe a bat in the hand. I'm just ready to go. Make sure when he looks down in the dugout, he sees me like, okay, good, ready. But he instilled that in me by giving me that opportunity in the first place, where we had established pinch hitters. You know, we had a Sean Dunstan. He had a Marvin Bernard on his team. You know, Shinjo was still on his team. Tiny Miner, Damon Miner. We had all these guys on the team who were used to being in that situation. You know, and then all of a sudden, boom, go get him good. I'm like, I got him.
Yeah.
So, and of course, it helps to have some success in those situations as well. But to not be afraid of that moment is what, you know, we look for, what I look for in a baseball player.
Without talking about the 2002 Giants team where you went to the World Series against the Angels. So you mentioned Dusty Baker, right? He's been a big influence in your life. What are some cool things about Dusty? What did you learn about Dusty?
Oh, Dusty, well, first of all, congratulations to Dusty for finally getting that big monkey off of his back as far as winning the whole thing. I wish we could have done it for him with the Giants in 02 and or with the Cubs in 03, but for him to get it is special. But learning from Dusty is just how everything wasn't about baseball. I mean, now he's a baseball man. I mean, that's what he does. That's what he did. But when I tell you, he'd come in and, you know, he'd ask, so how'd your son do in his piano recital? I'm like, how'd you know my son had a piano recital? Oh, you know, why is there talking up? You know, this, you know, I'm just like, wow. You know, so it's a different type of comfort that he gives to you, not just baseball, baseball, baseball. And then, like I said, cut it off. It's more personal. And when you get a guy that's personal with you like that, you tend to go out and, you know, try to be as prepared as you can so he doesn't look bad. It's almost like you're doing it for him. And you've shut out doing anything for yourself, you know, for the team, but you're doing it for Dusty. And I still tell the guys today, I said, if you look to your right and to your left and you do something for one of those guys, you'll be much more fulfilled in this game than you ever will. Because if it's just for me, if I'm doing just stuff for me, then I'm happy when I do well and I'm sad when I make an out. Whereas if I'm doing it for this guy, I can make an out and still be happy because maybe I pushed a guy over to third base for this guy and got him a, you know, free RBI. I can make a play in the outfield, you know, and, you know, maybe I helped a pitcher out or maybe I helped him get an incentive that he had coming his way. You know, where it was just a regular out for me, but for him, I mean, he needs me to be there for that play. So yeah, anytime you can make it to where it's not about you and you're doing it for somebody else, could be a parent, you know, player, city, community, whatever it is, you're going to get a lot more out of it than you are if you just do it for yourself.
Wow. And I could tell that, right? The players that played for Dusty throughout the years just rave about him. And you even saw on Twitter, right? Again, so Houston Astros, we know what, you know, what Houston did. But everyone was happy on social media. Oh, happy for Dusty, happy for Dusty. And, you know, I think that speaks volumes well. The relationship, yeah, right, between coach and player is huge.
And just one more thing. 100%, they got the right person for that job.
Yeah, they did.
100%, they got the right guy for that job.
They did. I want to ask you, too. We only got about 5 more minutes here, Tommy.
Come on.
I know. I'm kidding. Due to time constraints, man. Kidding. I got another 12 o'clock.
Constraints, come on. This is like the ESPYs. We can stay here all night.
All right, really quick. I got to know. Who are some pitchers that you faced in your career? Geez. I know you probably get asked this a lot, but
no,
I got to know.
The memories.
Like, who
I
are
got
some
memories.
Dudes like Pedro, right? You faced Pedro. Randy?
Randy was the one. Randy was the guy. He was the guy I talk about because I'm not supposed to face this guy, okay? I mean, we got platoon, you know what I'm saying? I mean, come on. We're going to platoon all this time, and then all of a sudden Randy's up, and I got to face him? Where's the platoon now? I don't know where the sense is. But just a real quick story. So I'm playing with the Dodgers. I got traded over and where did you trade over from?
Well,
Kansas City? Colorado. Colorado. Got traded over from Colorado. Sean Green's on the team, you know, a couple other guys, Eric Carroll's, you know, guys Eric I had played with earlier. So, you know, but there was just a couple holdovers over there. And all of a sudden, we got Davey Johnson. He's the manager. You know, I don't really know Davey that well, but regardless, I'm a nice guy. You know, seemed like a nice guy. Next thing I know, I'm starting against Randy Johnson. I'm like, does this guy know I don't play against the left-handers, and especially this one over here? Obviously not. So... True to form, he comes out, probably 3 pitches, but maybe 4. Anyway, slider, I'm swinging. All right, I go sit down. I'm sitting down. We go out defense, we come back on offense, so it's the bottom of the second or whatever it is, bottom of third. It could have been a couple innings later. I don't know if I let off. Anyway, long story short, Sean Green comes and sits next to me. He's like, you know he's tipping his pitches, right? I said, did you see the swings I just took? Because it looked like I knew he was tipping his pitches. He's like, oh, yeah. You know, that's why everybody else is just kind of, you know, doing what they do. And I was like, well, was somebody going to tell me? Or was this like, the secret code I was supposed to hear? So you know, lo and behold, next at bat, a lot more comfortable. I'm like, okay, yeah, he is tipping his pitches. Okay, I can see that. I can see that. And I end up, I lined out the shortstop. So it was like a win-win. But I'm sitting there like, how could I not get this information in the first place? No, no. First of all, I'm sitting there. Why am I playing in this game?
Yeah.
And then I'm sitting there. And
Sean
how could
Green's
I?
Holding out. Yeah, he's a lefty too.
And that's what I'm saying. But yeah, the great ones do that too, because Barry Bonds, played with him for a year. And he was, I didn't really know anything was going on then, but he was the same type. Like, he didn't want to give out his secrets, because if you did leave, you know, if you weren't a teammate of his later on and he has a pitcher, now you go to that team. So I got it. I did get it, because those are, that's why, you know, you try to get that core. You get that core together that you have, and when it comes to something like that. But in, you know, when the time is right and, you know, playoffs or whatever, then you just have to let it go. But, you know, getting up to that point. So there's some kind of fraternity there that's still there, yeah, still sticks.
Yeah.
To where if you're an outsider coming in, it's going to be a little tough to just kind of, you know, you got to nestle up to some guy. you got to put your ear out. You might hear something or two. You don't want to ask, because then they're going to think, you know, you got something going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, just being a good teammate like that is kind of what I was looking for. And you know, Sean Green called him Flacco. Flacco was real. He was like, man, sorry about that. You know, he wasn't even thinking about it, you know. Guys get so focused on what they need to do, especially when you're facing a guy like that. It's very easy to get distracted. But for that one, I was like, bro, I mean, that's something I would love to know.
Let me know. Did you get two more at-bats?
I had up to that point, I was probably 0 for whatever against him. And then I ended up getting 4 hits against him throughout the rest. I was 4 for 22 or something.
Right.
4 for 25. I don't even know. It wasn't great, but it was better after I found out what I needed to find out. And I wasn't as scared as Mr. Nasty coming in there and getting out of the way, because, you know, he still ran it up there 99, 100 miles.
Yeah, not doing the John Kruk, right, in the All-Star game.
Yeah, exactly. Trust me, I felt like it.
So Barry Bonds, you mentioned you played with him for a year. Really quick, we only got a couple minutes, man. So Barry Bonds, that home run against Troy Percival, right, in the World Series, right? It's at Anaheim. Come on. I mean, just where were you? What were you thinking? Right, you go back to YouTube and you watch that. You don't even know where the ball lands, and the crowd is, like, silent.
Yeah, and it was the most amazing ball that you see come off a bat. And it was, you know, because it was a World Series game, so they started it a little bit earlier, you know, 5 o'clock-ish or whatever. So by 7 or 7:30, it was a little dusk. It was a little dusky out there, and, you know, you get some smog. I don't know if it's smog. I don't know what's out there. But anyway, and the ball, it just gets in, and it's going to the top deck. And we're like, wow, that ball's hit pretty good. And then all of a sudden, you don't see anybody in the stands reach or jump or anything. And everybody looks at each other like, where'd it go? Did it just disappear? Did it just poof? Did it leave the stadium? I mean, did our eyes really deceive us like that? It was something else. It was, and the sound and the trajectory, it wasn't just hit hard. It was hit hard and up and out. And I don't know how you do that. I don't have that in my game.
It was off Troy Percival's throwing 99.
I mean, it was just
right
meat on meat right there. It's like, here it is, big boy. And he said, okay, I'm coming at you, big boy. And it was two big boys going at it.
And then that at bat that he had against Gagne too. I mean, that's a famous one. I know you were about,
yeah.
But yeah, that's a famous one too. All right, Goody, this has been an absolutely amazing. I mean, this has been one of the highlights of my year and a half radio career here at 1430 ESPN. This has been an absolute blast, personally too. You know, I mentioned how that 88 team was one of my favorites, and you know, you're only a couple years older than me, 3 years older than me, but, you know, I always looked up to you as a hero, and I got your baseball cards here. I know people speak very highly of you, but really appreciate you taking the time. Yeah, I might head over to Biden Field over there at 2 o'clock and check out some more stuff. So thank you.
Come on out, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Much love to Fresno, always.
All right. This has been Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
You're listening to the home of the San Francisco Giants, KFIG Fresno, 1430 ESPN.